This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, and thank you so much for starting your day with us here on BFM 89.9's Morning Run. It's Thursday, January 18th. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me, Joyce Goh. Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning, Han.
So, heard you had quite the night out.
I did.
Yesterday at the BFM networking series. Mm, so, yeah. You were there.
Yes, I was, and it was a full house.
Okay.
You missed out, man, Han. Yeah,
well, sorry, I have to go to bed early there. You know, it's past my bedtime there.
But, well, yeah.
Yeah, and it's quite the intimate session, right? Only 50 people initially?
Well, initially it was... Every network series, apparently, we try to keep it intimate. Mm. So it's about 50 people. First 50 people who sign up, they get to join the network series. Yesterday was a full house. We had to add chairs.
Wow. Okay.
Not sure what's the final count, whether was it more than 50, because we had more than 50 people sign up.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so the theme for yesterday's event was an outlook for equities for this year, you know, in light of this being a general election year. So, what did you learn there? What was your key takeaway?
Well, they showed charts on past previous elections, how the trend is.
The pre-election rally.
Yeah, there's rally. And then even after that, it'll drop a bit. There's a rally before, and then after that, it might drop a bit, but not that much. Mm-hmm. Except for 2008 when the unexpected happened.
Ah.
Then it dropped like a lot.
Okay.
Because I guess... certainty in a way, but yeah, so it was very good. It was a very interactive session.
Uh-huh.
We got to ask questions on the floor. The floor people got to ask questions,
right.
And it was very interactive with we get experts in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically yeah, it was a very good event.
Now, Joyce, I know you were looking forward to the food. Was the food great?
Yeah, it was.
On par with the information that you got, like the food for your mind, on par.
Yes, and even you can have drinks as well, Coke.
Oh, there's drinks as well.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's good. I mean, in general, it was a good event, as in you get to meet the experts, BFM family, and also meet new people.
Great. So, folks, do you know that the BFM networking series, it features business and thought leaders, community leaders, and these are intimate sessions, okay? Usually limited for the first 50 people or so. So, if you want a heads up on future BFM networking series, then make sure you join the BFM did I just make up a word? Series? Maybe. I don't know. But make sure you... I'm not making this up, though. Make sure you join the BFM community, and you can do that by going to our website, www.bfm.my. All right, just a quick roundup of some news that occurred while we slept. I'm starting with a big one out of the Korean Peninsula. So both North and South Korean athletes will march together at the Winter Olympics under a unified flag.
Wow,
how about
that's
that?
A huge step, right?
Yeah.
For both of them.
This is a diplomatic breakthrough, following days of talks between the two countries. However, this is not unprecedented. The last time it happened was in the 2006 Winter Games and also back in the 1991 Table Tennis Championships.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, you had the North and South joining together. And
but I guess timing of it, because of how there were tensions like a couple of months ago coming from the North side.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
To the world.
To the point that, both North and South Korea have also agreed to form a joint North and South Korean women's ice hockey team for this game. So pretty exciting stuff.
Mm.
Also in the news, you've got Apple. All right, we are a business station, so let's talk business real quick. Apple will pay about $38 billion in taxes on the more than $250 billion cash pile that they have outside of the U.S.
Wow, they're sitting on a lot of cash.
That's right. So this is in light of the U.S. tax overhaul implemented by President Donald Trump. So, $38 billion in tax up front. On top of that, they pledge to invest about $350 billion in the States over the next 5 years.
So the changes would be, I think, corporates pay lower taxes.
Correct.
Also, offshore profits means profit outside America is what they don't pay taxes on, just a one-off tax.
Yeah, one-off tax for repatriation of funds. Even individual tax rates are lower as well.
Mm.
And over in the UK, they have appointed, check this out, a Minister of Loneliness. So this is to tackle social isolation, a problem that is endured by 9 million Britons.
Wow, okay. But do you think this has to do with social media as well? So you tend to keep to yourself. Well, some people...
Well,
or do you think it's something that has been there all the time.
Well, I think it's been there for a while, you know, given that it affects 9 million Britons. And according to this article, it appears to feature those who are more, those who are older, right? But to the point where it's such a big problem that they have to appoint a minister of loneliness.
It's good they're looking into this.
Yeah, great. Mm. Speaking about loneliness, in just a bit, we'll talk about the divorce process, which could face some digital disruptions. That's coming up next here on BFM 89.9. James Taylor there with Money Machine right here on BFM 89.9. You're tuned into The Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me, Joyce Goh. Money Machine. Some might use that term to describe divorce lawyers, I guess. Right? I guess they make a lot of money, so I'm told. Now, there's this British company, the cooperative group known as The Co-op. Now, they're offering a new online service. Now, it aims to make divorce too easy, some say, for couples to split up. So they're offering this digital divorce service that can be completed in as little as 4 months and could be done for about $825. Now, to give you a comparison, the average divorce, say in the States, costs about $20,000. So, question here is, I don't know, are there some aspects of our lives which do not need to be made easier, that should not be disrupted by tech, you know, any kind of digital intrusion? What do you think?
Yeah, well, Han, this is what digital divorce service that they're offering. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's a good question to raise, because whether or not there are certain things in life that, you know, you need time to process it, emotions are involved.
Right.
Many people, like in this case for a divorce, other family members are involved as well. If you have kids and all that, do you want to make it that easy, like there's nothing? But then again, it also boils down to the couple. It's very hard to it's very subjective as well.
Yeah, I know, sure. But then you don't want it to be, like you said, too easy, whereby you can just act on the whim, right? You know,
yeah, correct. Let's get married and let's get divorced.
Let's get divorced. You know, I've got $825 to spare. Yeah, fine, let's just do this online.
Yes.
Click, right? And
yes,
then there goes your marriage, right? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't there be a higher barrier of exit?
Yeah. higher barrier of exit.
Yeah, when it comes to these kind of processes, mm-hmm, right? But mm-hmm, hey, if you zoom out and look at how tech or these digital advancements are threatening, you know, various aspects of our lives. You know, you really have to think whether or not there are pockets of our lives that should be sacred. Like, for example, there's a story of people being able to choose the gender of their babies, or you know, even choose the physical appearance or physical traits of their babies, for example, right? So just because
it's like playing God.
Yeah, I know. Just because we can, you know, should we actually go down that path?
I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who think they can't. It's okay, because with technology advancement, we should advance with the times. There are people who think that we shouldn't play God. I believe like we shouldn't play God. It depends on the individual. Coming back to this divorce thing, though, do you think also it's because of culture and today, I guess, people take marriage, more lightly than perhaps 40 years ago?
Yeah, previous generations. Mm-hmm. Now, look, I tutor sociology, right? And one of the things they talk about in the sociology textbook is that one of the factors that has contributed to the rise in divorce cases is because of the greater access to legal means, right? There are a few factors here, right? For example, it's no longer as much of a taboo in society. Yeah. For example, yes, there's greater career opportunities or life chances for women. Another one is this, you know, that it's the process has become so fluid now. It's so lubricated right now, where it's a lot easier to get a divorce now. Mm-hmm. But with this service that's being promoted by Co-op, where you can do it on the cheap, or relatively speaking, mm-hmm, and do it a lot faster, that could, right, hasten the rate of divorce.
Yeah.
On one hand, yeah, it's great. You can save money. It's more efficient. Maybe less paperwork. You can save on that kind of cost. But like you pointed out, the outcome would be you've got families that are, you know, that are broken up, right?
Yeah, and kids.
So, yeah.
And also, I think it also helps people get away with dealing with real emotions in a way. And divorce is an emotional thing. Mm. Whether or not the couple needs to go for counseling before they actually try and end it, right? There's so many things that could happen rather than just go online and, oh, let's get a divorce.
Yeah, so higher barrier to exit.
Yes, higher barrier to exit.
Great stuff. All right, it's 14 minutes past 6 a.m. Right now. We'll be back with more right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Beach House with Lover of Mine. And you're tuned in to The Morning Run. Han and Joyce keeping you company on this Thursday morning, January 18th. Now, for some in the UK, apparently, this would mark, after today, it will mark the start of their weekend because they have adopted a four-day weekend. So this British company called Normally Design Studio has been experimenting with a four-day work week, giving employees off on Fridays, although work duration remained at 8 hours on those working days, right? So question is, can a four-day work week be good for businesses and employees? I'll definitely, first things first, I'll say as an employee, like, heck yeah, sign me up for that, right?
Yeah, well, I guess it, at the end of the day, you can work 4 days, 5 day week, 6 day week. It's about your output and your deliverables, how productive you are. You can work 5 day week, the whole week, be in the office and not do anything.
Okay, that's right? That's from an employee's point of view, though. But say for a business who has to deal with their customers, you know, they need to be able to, rely on a set of services. And, you know, if they know that you'll be there Monday to Friday from 9 to 5, right, wouldn't that lend more certainty to the customer experience as opposed to, it's going to be a hit and miss thing. You don't know if that employee is going to be there.
You can rotate. You can roster the employees. You do a four-day work week and roster. I guess according to this show, it's a clip, right? That's on BBC. If you watch
it's a video,
it, she talks about how employees are happier and she feels like profit turnover has gone up. Right. And better results. She feels like the workforce is happier and a higher retention rate. So all these are results of them enforcing this four-day work week. And it seems to be working for them. Of course, from a company's point of view, it helps their bottom line as well. If you work four-day week, I think... some of them will say we'll only pay you for 4 days.
Maybe lower cost. Well, yeah, apparently, according to this company, that extra day can be used by employees to do other things. You know, for example, pursue passions, etc. Right?
Spend time with the kids.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But then, what about the business's competitiveness? Right? Because if let's say you're the only one, you're the outlier, you're the only company in your industry that's doing this 4 day week, and presumably you're not able to service your customers as well. If let's say your customer needs something on that Friday, but you're shut down.
So no, I'm saying that to rotate. So you have employees that you have the 40 weeks. So Tuesday to Friday, and then Monday to Thursday, you roster your employees accordingly. So you still service your customers, but from Monday to Friday. But then again, your employees, in this case, as this company says, it's a happier workforce. Your employees are happier, they're more productive. So, you know, it really depends on the company and then employees. Because again, Han, I feel there are people out there, they're working, they're in the office, they're clocking in 12, 13 hours. But what are they doing? They're on Facebook.
Well, unless if the employer blocks off their Facebook account.
You know, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
On company time, they say, okay, I'm going out for, I don't know what, a meeting and I don't know where they go. And then they come back. They leave at like lunchtime. They come back at 4.
Or like they go for their 3 day tariq breaks.
Correct.
And all that.
Yeah, they leave at 12 o'clock and they come back at 4 and they stay back until 8 or 9. But is it productive when between 12 to 4, they're out, I don't know, doing what?
Sure.
If it's not work-related, like I'm saying.
Speaking from experience there. Look, so I get the perspective from an employee, right? Obviously, as employees, we want to be able to work less for the maximum amount of gains, right? But I'm trying to understand whether there's another dimension to it, right? So from a business perspective, is this feasible? Going back to your idea, obviously, you have put a lot more thought into this than I have. You've got a whole business plan lined up.
Yeah.
But if you're going to double up your employees, so essentially you need like a second shift, right?
Yeah, to
cover
that
Friday.
Teamer.
How is that going to be, how is that going to lower your operating cost? Or wouldn't that add,
you keep your headcount. You keep your team lean in a way. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But if your team is striving towards the same goal, productivity, giving, the best results, because at the end of the day, it's about results and making your customers happy. You're saying it's a service company, right? Mm-hmm. This company is a service company. So, I guess they can rotate. Or maybe you take time off you take turns to take time off.
All right. So quick question here. What would you do with that extra time off? Look after the kids?
Yeah, spend on the kids. Or maybe catch up with your friends.
I'll just sleep. That's all I want to do. All right. It's 26 minutes past 6 a.m. We've got the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin coming up. But first, here's The Verve with Sonnet right here on BFM 89.9. That was Fluorescent Adolescence by the Arctic Monkeys right here on BFM 89.9. Hey, you know, we had some pseudo-Arctic conditions in recent weeks, right? It was so cold here in Malaysia.
Actually, I miss it. It's getting hotter already. Do you feel? I know.
I love the cold, though.
Yeah, I miss that.
Totally born in the wrong country here.
Really? So don't you like your nasi lemak?
Well, yeah. Okay, nasi lemak or cold conditions. Yeah, nasi lemak. Yeah, fine. Given the colder conditions that we had recently, you know, I'm sure many of us kind of felt like, you know, taking longer naps, you know, maybe even having some hibernating sessions, you know, in recent weeks. In fact, it turns out that there's a study showing that January is our least productive month. So we complete just 7.2% of our yearly tasks, in the month of January, as opposed to the average 8.3%, right, that is supposed to even out over the course of 12 months, right? So why is this? And now that, or if this is true, should we start bucking the trend? Should we up our game and be more productive?
I think this is according to an article in Fast Company, right? Okay. So perhaps it's for people in the US. I don't know. I think for you and I, Han, the start to the year in January, it's been quite intense for us here on the morning run.
Well,
I think we've been running quite intensely, right? So it depends. I think in Malaysia, do you know, I don't know, in January, because December is when things kind of slow down more.
Yeah, but then that's when generally you've got the lead up to Chinese New Year.
Yeah.
And then, like, for example, you got Taipusam and Federal Territories Day coming up at the end of the month.
Long weekend.
Right, you know, those 3-day weekends. Not that I'm complaining, but I can see how those results might be reflected in the Malaysian context as well. We may be less productive in January compared to, say, you know, the third quarter of the year when we have fewer annual public holidays, right?
Yeah, so according to this article, it shows that productivity picks up towards, let's see, September, October. It peaks at October, and November, it comes down to 9% in November, and then it drops to 8% in December. Mm. So yeah, as you say, perhaps third quarter onwards, things start picking up a bit more. Second half, most of the time, things start picking up a bit more.
Yeah, well, definitely in the business community.
Yeah. And if you look at days of in the week, which days do people complete the most tasks? It starts off strong Monday, Tuesday, and then it tapers down.
Just all downhill from there.
Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday.
Friday. That's no surprise there. So, given all these data points, right, we have broken it down by month, or this article, Fast Company, has broken it down by month, or even down to the day. So, how can we up our productivity game? So, it gives some steps. So, for example, one of them being to focus on self care. You can identify 5 things that replenish you, and then also identify things that deplete you, like social media, toxic relationships, unhealthy habits, etc. And then try to reduce that, right?
Yeah. It also says that we should identify our priorities, so we limit ourselves to 3 priorities. And if you have more than 3 priorities, then you have none. So it's true. I guess also time management.
Mm.
You know, you need to know what is priority, because sometimes you have so many things happening.
That's right.
You just need to clear the clutter and just prioritize and boom, boom, boom. If not, you'll get nothing done.
Boom, boom, boom. Got it. Also, another point is that to set up future successes, you know, if your workload has lightened up, use January to prepare for future months. I think that makes sense.
If that's true.
A slowdown in, say, business news, and hopefully I'm apprehensive about saying all this stuff on air because I know my boss is listening. She might get some ideas right now, but
yeah,
I can kind of enjoy the slack right now. But yeah, so according to this article, set yourself up for future successes. If you have that extra bandwidth this month, then try to plan ahead, right?
But January is also a month where you kind of chart the year in a way,
right?
Like what's happening, like first few months. This is what school holidays, right, and also festivities. You know, what we're gonna do. So January is also kind of a month where where you plan ahead in a way, no?
Right, but at the same time, that also comes with it, all these meetings. Oh, let's have a goal-setting meeting and, you know, this meeting and that meeting.
That's right.
No wonder we're not so productive in January then. So, you know, from the business side of things, now that there are these data points that show that we are less productive this month, you know, are there steps that employers can take in order to either boost up productivity or otherwise? I mean, what do you think?
Well, employers, I guess they would want you productive all the time, Monday to Friday, January to December. But I guess some people, what they do in January also is they take some time off because the kids start school.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So maybe that might impact productivity as well. But you have to, because you have to prepare the kid for school, bring the kids to a new school or whatever. They're just starting school, right?
Slowly ramping up to our peak productivity for the year. It's still early days. I guess you can, we'll try and keep you company as you you know, become more productive as 2018 goes along. It's almost 6:45 a.m. right now, and we'll be back with more in just a bit here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Pink Floyd with Hey You here on the Morning Run. I don't quite how to, you know, properly say that song title. Is it Hey You or is it Hey You? I don't know which one is it though. I'm not too sure.
Depends on your mood, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Hey You. All right, Hey You. So you can always join in on the conversation. You can always send us WhatsApps at 018-789-8899, 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We tweet out the subjects or the topics that we have spoken about since 6 a.m. this morning on our Twitter handle at BFM Radio. So you can also follow along and send in your comments. We'd love to hear from you. Now, on to this next story. So yesterday, former Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad suggested that tertiary graduates earning a living by becoming nasi lemak sellers or, you know, driving Ubers and Grabs is a sign that the country does not have enough high-income jobs, and it's not something to boast about. And here's what he said, quote, "We cannot be proud of those involved in selling nasi lemak or becoming Uber drivers. This is for them to sustain their income as they have no income sources." Is this not something to be proud of, selling nasi lemak or driving, you know, or being a ride-sharing, you know, a driver?
Well, when it comes to selling nasi lemak, I know one very popular one, Village Park.
Yeah,
I know it's a money-making machine, right? It's cash business, right? So I don't know if, I mean, saying nasi lemak may not be a bad thing.
Right.
It depends on the business, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah, I think what the former Prime Minister is talking about is perhaps setting up a roadside stall, you know, which is just a simple table, something a lot more modest than, say, the restaurant you referenced to, right? But, I mean, in itself, I don't think it's something not to be proud of, right? It's not something to be shy about. At least you're taking the initiative that during this interim of not having a stable or high-income job, are out there and trying to actively make an income, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Rather than just sitting around at home and not doing anything, you're trying to look for income and all. And I guess, today in this day and age, a lot of people, some of them, they drive ride-hailing cars. Mm-hmm. It's because they want the time flexibility. Mm. It gives them time to do other things or do their other job that they're doing, or maybe things are not, the economy is not really, for that particular job, it's not really that good or in the sector that they're in, so they're doing double jobs or they want more income. It really depends. And also, I don't know, do you think, is it an issue of the job availability or is it an issue of the talent, do you think, in the market?
Okay, so according to the former Prime Minister, he points to the lack of these high-knowledge jobs, these high-income jobs, right? But based on the many discussions that we've had over the years with corporate leaders, the reverse seems to be true. Those positions are there. In fact, many employers are desperate for those high-skilled workers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the talent pool, the existing talent pool here in Malaysia, the level of graduate out of the academic institutions here in Malaysia are just not up to par, right?
It's true.
So it's more of a supply side issue more than the demand.
And also language. When I speak to a number of these business leaders or CEOs, they say a lot of issues that come up from these interviews is the language, the master of the language.
Communication skills,
English, you know, just basic communication skills is not there. I'm not saying that So we're not talking about Uber drivers and nasi lemak sellers. We're just saying that what Tun M is saying is they're not available. There's not high paying jobs out there, but it's not that. It's because of the graduates that are coming out. Some of them, they just cannot fit the bill.
Right. So it's not about like the state of the economy, but more so it's an issue with the state of education here in Malaysia, at least the state of formal education. But going back to those who may be, you know, selling nasi lemak, setting up those roadside stalls and driving Ubers, I think the fear here is that they will be stuck in a rut, you know, because so much of their time is taken up selling nasi lemak or driving Ubers, and they need to really hustle to get money. There will be an opportunity cost, them not taking the time and spending the resources to improve themselves so that they can meet the requirements for high-income jobs. All right, it's almost 7 a.m., 5 minutes till we'll have the news. And after that, we'll have more right here on BFM 89.9. And thanks for starting your morning with The Morning Run here on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me, Joyce Goh, keeping you company on this Thursday, January 18th, now 7 minutes past 7 a.m. So a comment made recently by the president of the National Union of Journalists, NUJ, has caused quite a stir. Mohammad Taufik Razak was asked to respond to a recent report in the Asian Correspondent titled "Female Journalists, Male Politicians, and the Epidemic of Sexual Harassment in ASEAN." Taufik had suggested that female journalists dress appropriately and be mindful of their conduct. In the context of female journalists, particularly attractive ones, this sexual harassment can easily happen if both sides reciprocate.
Yeah, so it's always the victim's fault, is it?
Well, I guess according to Mohammad Taufik Razak, you know,
he's disappointing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Extremely disappointing here. Now, we spoke to a journalist, Bu Su Lin, to get her thought on the NUJ's comments.
I think it's very disappointing to hear the NUJ president tell his own colleagues in his profession to dress so-called modestly to avoid sexual harassment. I mean, that's essentially victim blaming. And he should really be telling off the politicians instead for attacking and propositioning female journalists. And he should know, as well as anyone else in his profession, that female journalists, women journalists, we tend to dress so-called modestly anyway. I mean, all of us, if you look at us, we typically wear trousers and long sleeve shirts everywhere because of rules in government offices and courts that don't allow us to, you know, wear typical knee-length skirts. So in the end, we just wear pants everywhere.
We also ask her if she thinks the media fraternity is doing enough to address these incidents head-on instead of just sweeping them under the carpet.
I'm not sure just how common sexual harassment is in the media fraternity. I mean, we've only just seen the Asian Correspondent report that came out recently, right, which interviewed two Malaysian women journalists, one of whom came out publicly with a name. The other stayed anonymous. So we've seen that. But again, I don't know how widespread this problem is, but the Asian Correspondent report should be the start in helping us come up with guidelines on how to deal with this, or how to deal with people outside our profession, newsmakers, when they sexually harass women journalists. What can we do? Yeah, we should start talking about that. I mean, the easy knee-jerk response would be to not let women journalists cover so-called dangerous events, or to be alone with newsmakers, stuff like that. But that isn't the correct response too, because as we know, in politics especially, most newsmakers are men. And if you want to cover the news, you're going to have to deal with them. So rather than to take a knee-jerk response and stop women journalists from covering male newsmakers, then we should look at other ways on how we can make it safer for everyone.
That was local journalist Bu Su Lin responding to comments made by Mohammad Taufik Razak, who is the president of the National Union of Journalists, NUJ. So, you know, I've been in the broadcast industry for a while now, and tragically, I've actually heard stories from my female colleagues, not here at BFM, but at the previous TV stations that I worked at. The stuff that they endured, right, while going out for some of these press conferences are, unfortunately, not even fit to be said on air. Like, it's crazy stuff, right? And unfortunately, you know, now you've got these comments from the NUJ, which totally... at least in my opinion, misses the point, right?
Yes.
The point here is that there should be, well, perhaps more pushback against the perpetrators as opposed to telling the victims, our colleagues, right,
the
female journalists, right, to dress more appropriately.
Yeah, and these are like adult men, right? I mean, why can't they be professional? I mean, you can wear, for us journalists, like Bulin says, you can be wearing pants and all that, but in their mind, if they take it out of context, then it's them. Why should it be the victim, right? And another point that she pointed out that I think is true, that is a good point, is in politics, most newsmakers are men. So it's about how we make it safer for the female journalists as well as, I guess, awareness. And education. I mean, among us journalists, you know who are the ones to avoid.
We tell each other, exactly.
You know, this one has a tendency to this. So you kind of know already that you know what to avoid and who to avoid and things like that.
Yeah.
So, but it's sad that it's come to this. And interestingly, she brought up this article on Asian Correspondent Report, right? The title is Female Journalists, Male Politicians and the Epidemic of Sexual Harassment in ASEAN. This is written by Li Lian Kong. We will have her on our Pressing Matters show this coming Monday, Han.
Great. Yeah, going to be looking forward to that. So that's going to be Pressing Matters, our show that comes on every Monday at 9:30 a.m. But going back to this dilemma that our female colleagues have, right, it's about, because there is this sense of a power hierarchy, right, because the female journalists would have to go to these male newsmaker and the male newsmaker, you know, has the story, and so they see it, you know, as, well, it's, if you want this story, you know, I can have more freedoms with you. And this is some of the commentary that I've seen from some of my female colleagues and other local journalists, you know, who have since commented on this matter as well. So I think that entire dynamic has to change as well, right? Whereby these male newsmakers, be they politicians, business leaders, etc., they have to be held to a higher standard, and they
have to be professional.
Yeah. On one hand, you need to call them out. Right, yes. But at the same time,
if you call them out, then there's this whole situation that the journalists are in as well. You call them out, then what? Because you see,
then you lose a story. No,
it's not only that. Like this article says, I think Mohammad Taufik says. The article that Asian Correspondent points out, some of them, if you voice out, then what happens? Right, the what will happen? What if the guy says no such thing? And I think Mohammad Taufik says that, you need evidence. How are you going to get evidence?
Right.
Sometimes when what evidence do you need? He says sometimes you need evidence. What kind of evidence do you need?
Right, unless you wear a body cam the whole time, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So, or a mic on you the whole time, right?
So now, coming back to our conversation with Su Lin, we also asked her if she thinks the media fraternity should do more to call politicians out about this type of behavior.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have to call out politicians and also the NUJ president himself for not standing up for his own women colleagues. I mean, he clearly doesn't understand what sexual harassment means. Sexual harassment means a lack of consent, but then he seems to imply that to quote him, he said, in the context of female journalists, particularly attractive ones, this bracket sexual harassment can easily happen if both sides reciprocate. So obviously he does understand that sexual harassment means a lack of consent. So people need to understand that. He needs to understand that male politicians really shouldn't go around propositioning women journalists and putting their hands on women's thighs during interviews or sticking their tongues into journalists' mouths at parties. What is that? I mean, do you not know how to behave in public? That is just completely unacceptable.
Again, that was journalist Bu Su Lin with her thoughts on the much-discussed comments by NUJ president to female journalists about dressing appropriately. All right, it's coming up. Well, it's now 15 minutes past 7 a.m. And coming up in just a bit, we'll take a look at the local papers right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.